Expectations are powerful influences in our lives. They can bring excitement or pressure, lead to fulfillment or disappointment. We are aware of them from the time we're children. On one hand, they can help guide and structure our lives, but they can also limit us, or worse yet, halt us in our tracks. Expectations are definitely worth exploring. Today's story for all ages, The Paper Bag Princess, is amusing because it shakes up our expectations. Maybe there's a lesson in our chuckles. Maybe expectations shouldn't be blindly accepted. Perhaps we could all learn a bit from Princess Elizabeth, daring to determine her own unexpected future. In fact, we could learn a lot about expectations from kids in general. For most of us in this affluent society, as kids, we learn of Santa Claus. And if you want to see the excitement of anticipation and the joy of fulfilled expectations, check out The Kids at Christmas. When we're little, we think we have a sweet deal figured out. You just have to be good and you get toys. But as we grow up, we learn that life isn't always that simple. We can do our best and hope for the best, and sometimes end up with just a lump of coal. And worse, sometimes it's those who are the least good who end up with the most toys. But even for us grown-ups, Christmas is a special time for many reasons. In a chapter of the book, A Chosen Faith, by John A. Burens, I hope I pronounced his name right, sent to me by our most recent intern, Vicky Rao, when she saw today's sermon topic, Burens observes that Jewish and Christian religious holidays are closely tied to expectations, even in the timing of the holidays. They give us celebrations to look forward to. And in our culture that's placed in the Northern Hemisphere, it would seem predictable that winter holidays of light, Christmas and Hanukkah, would appear during our darkest, coldest time of year. And if that doesn't seem clear to you down here in Texas, come on up to Canada in December and you'll see why it's a good idea to have a celebration. Likewise, we would expect to celebrate new life in the spring, the perfect timing for Passover and Easter. But it's not just the holiday's placement on the calendar that links them to the notion of expectations. That theme appears in the stories as well. Consider the Christmas story, for instance. Think of the events from Joseph's perspective. The woman he plans to marry is suddenly pregnant. Now there's a challenge to expectations. But he stands by her, a great example of unconditional love. Then this mysterious child goes on to have a powerful and again unexpected lasting impact on world history. Overall, the stories of religious holidays often challenge deep-rooted expectations about how life goes. They inspire a type of faith that endures and is even strengthened by upsets to our assumptions about people and the world. But what about the role of expectations in our everyday lives? Parents are some of the first people in our lives to impart expectations. I can remember when I was little, maybe 5 or 6, asking my mom what my life would be like as I grew up. She said I'd finish public school, or elementary school, I suppose I should maybe say. Finish elementary school, then go on to high school, then to university, then get married, maybe, have kids. From my mom's comments when I was young, I got the impression that there was a plan in place. You go from high school to university just like you go from grade 2 into grade 3. That's just the way it is. I did find comfort in feeling that a plan was in place. However, as might be expected, by the time I was in high school, I challenged the choices that seemed to have already been made for me. But after a couple of requisite arguments, I did decide to go to university. Nothing had changed from the original plan, but in wrestling with the choice myself, I made it my own. I felt like now I had an expectation of myself. My mom was trying to guide me along in her view of what would bring me the best future. Her view seemed always optimistic. But sometimes mothers, just as lovingly, see the need to ensure that their child is prepared to face struggles. Such is the case with the mom in the Langston Hughes poem, Mother to Son. Hughes was a prominent writer during the Harlem Renaissance, a period in the 1920s when African American literature, art, and music thrived. This poem is written to show the manner of speaking that this mother has. I'm not sure how well I'll deliver it, since I do have my Canadian accent, but I'll do my best. So I apologize to Mr. Hughes if I don't live up to his expectations with my delivery. Mother to son. Well, son, I'll tell you. Life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters and boards torn up and places with no carpet on the floor. Bare. But all the time I've been a-climbing on and reaching landings and turning corners, and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So, boy, don't you turn back. Don't you set down on the steps because you find it's kinder hard. Don't you fall now, for I's still going, honey. I's still climbing, and life for me ain't been no crystal stair. The primary message from the mom seems to be about perseverance. When things get rough, don't just stop. Don't give up and set down on the steps. Keep climbing on. She talks of turning corners and going in the dark. In other words, continuing in a new direction sometimes and moving forward even when the future is unclear. Likewise, this is good, great advice for all of us. And likewise, we're offered valuable parental insight from a father to a son this time in Proverbs 5:25-26. Let your eyes look directly forward and your gaze be straight before you. Take heed of the path of your feet, then all your ways will be sure. Interestingly, it was my mom who alerted me to that Proverbs passage. All of us, even those we'd expect to have the most gleaming of crystal stairs, run the risk of getting trapped, getting tripped up on expectations that don't work out. If we don't let go of them, they can totally halt us. Such was the case for a very memorable character in Charles Dickens' book, Great Expectations. He got the title of the sermon before I did. Miss Havisham is an older woman, 60s perhaps, of great means. She slowly moves about between a couple rooms in her great mansion, but really no farther. She wears a beautiful white gown and has a huge banquet spread out on a table. And the main part of that banquet is the grand wedding cake. The problem is, though, that her dress has yellowed with the years, and the banquet and giant cake in particular are delights only for vermin. The cake is being consumed by mice and beetles. We learn that something happened on her birthday many years ago, something that halted her. The clocks were stopped, and nothing was allowed to be touched after that point. We may assume that she was jilted by her groom on that wedding day, but Dickens never tells us for sure. Whatever happened, it's clear that she expected to be married and that it didn't work out, and she couldn't move on. She tells Pip, the main character of the book, that she is being consumed on the inside just like the cake he sees on her table. Miss Havisham got trapped in her own vision of what her life should be. I must say, she's someone who could have really benefited from hearing the story of the paper bag princess. Miss Havisham is an extreme illustration of what happens when someone clutches forever to an expectation that just isn't going to work out. I hope that most of us don't have a sugary, decaying metaphor at home to show it, but how many of us have gotten stuck, at least for a while, waiting for something to happen, something to pay off, for things to work out the way we think they should? It's a universal truth that all of us will have to grapple with change and the resulting shift in expectations for better or worse. Change comes through a marriage or divorce, a birth or death, a promotion or job loss, a graduation or withdrawal. During the positive times, looking ahead to the future might seem easy and exciting, but in times of disappointment, we may wish we could just run away. On a personal note, MS has taught me that when you fall, both literally and figuratively, you get back up, dust yourself off, and keep going. And if you need help, ask. Furthermore, if the goal you're moving towards suddenly vanishes, or if your abilities suddenly change, have faith that a new opportunity will come along. Be flexible. Be open to changing your expectations of life and other people and yourself. For a couple years after my diagnosis, I did sit down on the steps. I made virtually no motion ahead in my life. My head seemed turned backwards, looking only at past achievements rather than anticipating my future. I could tell you a whole lot about current events back then. I spent hours watching CNN every day. Somehow it made it easier to imagine that I was doing something worthwhile with my time, when in reality, I was watching the lives of other people rather than moving forward in my own life. Looking compassionately at myself, I understand that some of my haze was from medication and, of course, the need for my mind to adjust to a new style of living. But after a good while, it was time to get climbing again. Progress is harder now, and expectations have to be flexible. But hard-earned achievements are extra sweet, and I've learned that there is joy in the climb itself. And joy is something we all need. We all need. People and other creatures have limits on the number of times that their hopes can be dashed. If enough disappointment arises, efforts to reach goals cease. Psychology has termed this learned helplessness. An experiment was done in which a large predatory fish was put in a tank. In front of it was a clear divider, separating it from an abundance of its favorite fish to eat. Over and over, the fish tried to get to its meal, bonking its head again and again. After a while, it stopped trying. After a little more time passed, the researchers removed the barriers, and the little fish, its favorite food, swam freely all around the hungry predator. It didn't try to eat them. It saw no hope in trying to eat. Negative messages and beliefs can limit future success. When we consider this, we understand that the communication people receive from parents and teachers is so important. The underlying message I got from my mom when I was young was that I was capable of succeeding in future endeavors, such as completing university. The mom in Hughes' poem uses words to prepare and strengthen her boy for overcoming any future obstacles. The common thread in both mothers' guidance was the intent and presumed effect of instilling self-confidence. These parents were also letting their children know that they've got someone cheering them on. Teachers also play a role in people's development and therefore have to be particularly aware of the messages that they send out. There's a world of difference between Charlie failing a math test and the teacher offering extra help and encouragement and the teacher returning the paper with only a stern look. But what if Charlie's got a history of just goofing off? Well, the opportunity for him to improve must still be offered. While working at a college, I saw evidence of the long-lasting effects of a tough experience with education. I remember one man in particular. He was a guy in his 30s, and I was administering an assessment to determine which level of communications course would be best for him. He was the only person doing the assessment that particular evening, and I spent a little extra time talking with him before he started because he was so nervous. He said that the letters to him always looked jumbled when he was reading. I asked if he had ever been checked for a learning disability, and he seemed alarmed by this suggestion. I said that if you were found to have a learning disability, it would explain why reading was so hard and would also confirm that he had an average IQ or higher, since that's part of the definition of being learning disabled. His face lit up at the possibility of that finding. He said he had always just figured that he was stupid. I encouraged him to get an assessment, and he seemed receptive to the idea. I watched him as he stressed through his work on the communications assessment. His face was red and sweaty, and he wore a look of frustration and determination as he worked. But he managed to finish, and as he left the room, I encouraged him to feel good about having completed this assessment. I think he could tell that I was sincere in saying this and not being patronizing. I did admire his courage. By returning to school, a place he had associated with so much struggle, after a long time away, he was turning a corner and going in the dark, where for him in the past there'd be no light. I didn't see him again after that evening. That in itself wasn't significant. I didn't see most of the people I had assessed. I hope some success did come his way. That encounter was the most powerful example I'd seen of the lingering effects of a difficult educational background. Based on previous results, he fully expected to fail, but he still pushed himself to try again. Of course, great teachers can do a lot to turn things around. I hope he found many. Now, what if you're starting to think that expectations are just more trouble than they're worth? Perhaps you would like to follow the cynic's advice of blessed are those who expect nothing, for they shall never be disappointed. Maybe it'd just be easier to switch your life to autopilot and see where it goes. Well, you could, and there'd be no shortage of people who would steer your life for you with their own expectations. To illustrate, I can remember mentioning to my boss several years ago that I really needed someone to help me with some very technical material. Oh, just give it to Bill, he said. But he seemed so busy, I replied. Yeah, well, that's why you should give it to him. If you want something done, you should always give it to the busiest person, because he's the guy that's actually doing stuff. Now, let's look at the situation from Bill's perspective. Things are fine if he loves being involved with absolutely everything at work, if he's trying to be the first guy people think of, and if he has an expectation of eventually being promoted or at least feeling like an integral part of the company. But what if he's an autopilot kind of guy? What if he goes home with an ever-growing stack of paper to go through in the evening? It seems that the faster he plows through it, the more work he gets. If we don't have goals or dreams for ourselves, there's no shortage of people who will take the reins and have us work towards their expectations. Bill, like all of us, needs to assess his situation. Is his situation in harmony with the life he would like to be living? What gets him excited? Is there something he'd like to be doing in the evenings besides paperwork? Bill can't become his best self if he doesn't take the time to understand what he wants and to chart a course in that direction. For another autopilot example, we could return to Princess Elizabeth, our paper bag princess. Plans were in place for her to marry Prince Ronald. That's what the whole kingdom was expecting. And while the last illustration of the book, which you wouldn't have had the pleasure of seeing, I don't think, the last illustration shows her leaping for joy as she charges into her Ronald-free future, she probably did have to face parents who were less than excited about her news. She could have just caved to the pressure of others' expectations. She could have gone home and dressed up and made herself pretty like Prince Ronald wanted her to do, and then gone ahead with the upcoming wedding. That's what would have happened if she were steered by others' expectations. But we know from the last line of the story that things did end up her way. They didn't get married after all. We are all ultimately responsible for the direction of our lives. We have the responsibility to get to know ourselves, to discover what we're truly capable of, and to determine where we want our lives to go. We have free will, and life is filled with choices. Even if we choose not to take an active role in establishing our life's direction, we are still making a choice. We are choosing to surrender our will to the expectations of others. So how do we manage expectations ourselves? Perhaps these Buddhist words may help. Be ye lamps unto yourselves. Be your own confidence. Hold to the truth within yourselves as to the only lamp. Finally, as we move now into the future, may we all dream big dreams and not be afraid to create our own truly great expectations.